Our dad's panel. All right. I want to begin with some words from Charlotte Mason about architecture and parenting before we get started with this. She said this: "Truly, except the Lord build the house, they labor but in vain that build it. When the Lord builds, they labor also, but not in vain. Where is the promise for the edifying of the sober and righteous and godly Christian character, except as we shall labor, laying brick upon brick? We may well believe that, in this manner, the Lord and giver of life himself graciously undertakes the office of parent to every willing and obedient soul. But here is where the privilege and the responsibility of the human parent comes in. During the weak and tender years of the child, the laying of brick to brick falls to the parent. The foundation and the lowermost rounds of the building upon whose stability the safety of the whole depends. It rests with the parent to initiate goodness, as it were, to lay such habits of well-doing and well-being as are fit to support a building of God and able to bear the weight of the superstructure. Therefore, it behooves parents to study the principles of this divine architecture, which is their vocation." And so, with those words from Charlotte, obviously that's talking about mothers as well as fathers, right? So I hope that we'll be able to glean a little bit of wisdom from these dads that are up here. But to begin with, I'd like each of the dads to just quickly say just who they are and where their children are. Are they graduated? Do you have children at home? Just so that we can have some context with each of them. So, Art, can we start down there with you and come this way?
Sure. So, Art Middlekoff, and my oldest finished his first year of college, and then my middle child is my daughter, who is 15, and then my youngest is my son, who's here at the retreat with us.
I'm Mark Wood, and we have 52 children. Oh, five. We have five children. Two are homeschooling yet. We have two sets of children. The first three we homeschooled, and now we're back into the homeschooling again.
Oh yeah, you found. I brought my own. I'm Greg Rowling, and I have six children. My oldest is here in the back. Say hi, Adrian. Oldest son, he's 31, I think. I think that's how old he is. We have a 29-year-old daughter. We also did two sets where we have the two bigs, and then we've got the four littles at home now, 13-year-old boy-girl twins, a 10-year-old, and then we have just recently a 9-month-old foster son as well. So is there something else I needed to say? That's it.
My name's Kurt Yonke. My wife is Heidi. We have two kids. Levi just completed his third year of college, and my daughter Emily completed her first year of college this year. So we had kind of the empty nesting thing going on, and kind of dreaming a little bit about the next season of life and kind of what that is going to look like. So,
Kent Kelly, according to Mark's math, that we have 63 kids, which would be six kids, three out of the house, and three still in. So that's kind of, don't ever have them do your HVAC, apparently, because the billing might be a little strange. So glad to be here.
All right. So I have a series of questions that we'll start with, and the dads will just go down the line. If you want to pass, you can pass. If you have an answer, answer. And then after a while of doing that, we'll take some questions from you guys. So jot them down if you have any questions as we're going along, and we'll get to that at the end then. All right, so my first question for you dads is, tell us one read-aloud book that you enjoyed reading to your family. That's a good one, right? Okay, all right. Kent, why don't you start? Oh, never mind.
is it reading that?
Easy one.
I know. I'll just wait.
I think about Bridie.
Yeah, right. No. Bridie's good. It's about Mule and the Grand Canyon. Carry on, Mr. Bodich. I always got to do that. She always makes fun of me, so that's why I kind of balked right there, okay? Just so you kind of know the backstory of that reluctance.
Okay. So he mentioned that book in one of the LERs, and so I had to go home and read it to my kids, and that was a great book.
Which one, Kurt?
Carry on, Mr. Bodich. Yeah. I asked my daughter what books she remembered, and it was the Narnia books, which we had a great time reading in those long winter nights in Minnesota. And then she mentioned an invention book, and I don't know that we remembered the name of it, but she was telling me about the cotton gin, and she was just little when we read that book, so it really stuck with her.
This is a painful subject for me. I've started far more books with my children than we've finished, and they remind me pretty regularly that we never finished the Lord of the Rings trilogy, and there's a number of others that we never actually finished. So the last one that I actually completed was The Hobbit, when the twins were in bouncy seats, maybe just coming home from the hospital. But I did read it out loud. I don't want to them. I think my actually the one book that has been my favorite is I read the scriptures to the kids and I'd like to sit here and tell you that it happens every single day, but in honesty it doesn't happen every day. But I'd say that is the most important and my favorite read aloud time with the kids.
Those are very long books. I don't read long books. So, A Basket of Flowers to My Girls, that was a good one. And the Chuck Black series of allegories, The Kingdom of God, to my son.
So the family read aloud that we're doing now with those of us who are still at home, so the four of us, is doing Shakespeare, and that's mainly due to Nancy's influence and stuff that I've learned from her, and it truly is a delight. My kids and Barbara, we all love doing that together on Sundays.
Wonderful. Okay, good. All right, next question. Do you or did you participate in any of the school teaching in your family? So, Kent, can we start back over with you?
Sure. Is this how it's going to go?
She asked this question.
Yes, I know. You know, I tried to choose this. You always control the room by where you sit early, right? You go and you look and you go back to the wall. Don't trust. I'm an old cop, so you never sit with your back to the door because you want to always know who's coming in. But yeah, I messed this one up apparently. So I'm not a math guy, but I always built things with wood, and so I would try to work with the kids because I can do fractions because I know what a quarter of an inch is different than a half an inch because it makes a difference whether the door opens or closes, right? So my fraction help would be to take a one-inch ruler and make it a foot long and make it a giant inch, basically. And so you could look at 2/3 makes a 3/4. And then all of a sudden that thing on the paper were 3/8 plus 3/8 makes sense, right? 6/8 and then reduce it. And so it just, that's kind of where I did most of my work with the kids, was that rudimentary math to the real world connection, because that's kind of where the way I'm built. And I did reading with them and listened to narrations, and that's kind of how I helped. But Nancy did the major bulk of the teaching.
So same thing here. Heidi was like, did everything. And I was the dean of students, we would always say. So I will never forget when I came home the one night and my son was scrubbing the door where he had colored with a little rag. He was just little. And so I was the dean of students that had to come in. And I was trying not to laugh at that because it was funny, but she was very upset. And so that would have been the wrong thing to do at that point.
Well, I like the dean of students. I always say that I'm more like the president. I do social events and fundraising, mostly for the library. Right, guys. Okay, all right. No, and actually, I would agree with uh, I I feel better that you both went before me because I was feeling, again, a little bit bad about this. But I don't take part in really any of the formal education portion of the day. But I think my contribution is in just like these guys were saying, in part of creating that atmosphere and the discipline of education with the kids. So they're... the way that Charlotte Mason has influenced my relationship with my kids is just in the way that I build things. We make birdhouses or cigar box guitars or whatever we do. Having that mindset of giving them, you know, this feast, this the ability to take the knowledge in, use it, apply it, and have the aha moment for themselves, as opposed to me trying to tell them, here's what you need to know, you know. So that would be my involvement.
It's hard to pull nails for only 15 minutes. My little boys love to pull nails. But I think that Sally did the majority of the education, both the first time and now second time, but... I do a lot with the mechanical principles for both my girls and my boys, and I might tutor her a little bit when she has a problem with a scientific or science type of a topic. But I found that my little girls really were interested in World War II history, about the time that it was time to go to bed. And they drew me into that time after time after time because they knew I loved World War II history. And they'd say, now, where was Rommel again? And I'd go right into it, and we'd be up for another half hour.
I never knew that. We should have a chat because that's my hobby, too. So when I started off... for the formal lessons with my firstborn, I set it as a personal goal that I would do like an hour of formal lessons with him a day. That was kind of the goal, but I wasn't always consistent in that. So I figured with breaking that up into 20-minute chunks, I could do 20 minutes of French, 20 minutes of math, and 20 minutes of Bible, which seemed to be appropriate lessons for me to do with my kids, and then Barbara did all the rest. So that was when I just had one. And then when my daughter became old enough for formal lessons, then I tried to put in another hour a day. So I would try to do an hour with her before I would go to work, and then I'd have an hour in the evening with my son when I got home from work. And I did pretty much the same three subjects with her. And again, it wasn't literally every single day, but that was basically my goal. And at first it was reading, I guess, before we did some of those other things, it was reading. So I did end up teaching all three of my kids how to read. When my son, my oldest, when he got to be towards high school, he's a fiercely independent kid, and he has his own mind about things. And he began to get to the point where he wasn't really respectful of Barbara's authority over him, and she was reaching a point where she was feeling like she was unable to continue homeschooling him. And so we got to, it was right about, I guess, when he was in ninth grade, and we got to a real crisis point as a family because we had to make a choice. Barbara said that she felt like he really needed to be in a place where he had male instructors, and she basically said she can't do it anymore. And so at that point, we could either, you know, send him to a school, like a Christian school or public school or something like that, but... I was not willing to take that option. And so I made the decision that I was going to find a way to take on the majority of his homeschooling and do it myself. And that's what I did through high school. And so I put kind of my work with my daughter mostly on the back burner. And I would spend basically as much time as I possibly could in the evenings and in the weekends to work with him. And he was resistant to a lot of the stuff that I was doing, but it was man to man now, and so it was an extraordinarily difficult process to go through, and I think it wasn't the ideal, but I think that it was a very difficult process to follow, but the message that the Lord had to St. Paul was that my strength is made perfect in your weakness. And there was a lot of things about the schedule, the timing, the resources that made it such that we didn't have a formula for success. But not having a formula for success is the place where I think that causes the Lord to show up. And so I think that his strength was magnified in our weakness as a family. And so I have no regrets and no envy for anyone else's situation. I'm thankful for every single day that I had to go through that challenge.
Thank you. All right. We'll start with Art on this one. Okay. So, as the dad, as a dad, so it can be anything, what is one thing you think you did or that you do well in the home? So, Art, can we start with you?
I mean, I can think of a lot of things I don't do well in the home.
I'm getting to that.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I would say this, that, there's a lot of things that I do wrong, and I think, I'm a high-maintenance guy. I think Barbara she's got quite a challenge on her hands to be married to me. And so, we have our share of challenges where she has to deal with my extremes, and my kids have to deal with my extremes, and, kind of my ups and downs. I think that probably the strength that I bring is that I persevere. So, it doesn't matter how many times we face challenges. I don't give up. I don't give up. And we find a way to make things work no matter what.
Well, I asked Sally what she thought. And some of the answers that she came up with were interesting because I'd forgotten some of the things. But one of the things that she brought up to me was when we first started homeschooling, God laid it on my heart that we should homeschool. And I had to wait for God to tell her the same thing. And I did. And it came. And the other thing was that I gave her the freedom to spend what she needed to spend, trusting that she would buy what she needed. And she's been very good with that. She said that it was a very freeing to know that she could buy a book if she needed to buy a book or materials or whatever it was.
These are hard questions. It's difficult, I think, to pick what to say what you do well when your kids are sitting in the room with you. So I'm going to try not to exaggerate too much at my significance in the home. I think where I have succeeded in our family is in two things. One is that I try to stay very connected to my kids and what they're learning and what they're doing and what they're thinking and feeling and keep a conversation going with them all the time. And the other thing that I think has been, I always tell them, take anything from me that you think is good in being a father and do a little better on your own kids. And so I think that's something else that has been a success for me personally is taking these good things that I got from my own father and maybe having more relationship, more time, more emphasis, more focus on the kids than,
So I didn't do great at this, but there was a realization at some point that I'm a teacher in a public school. And so that's been my training and my experience. And so I'd come home and Heidi would want to talk about the day. And I had all kinds of answers and was very ready to share them with her because we were going to fix this, right? And I realized later on that wasn't what we needed to be doing. I mean, she just wanted to talk. And the idea that I was going to come and fix something was It's crazy. And I fell into that, you know, over and over again. It wasn't like I ever really probably resolved that real well. But there was a realization eventually that I didn't need to fix everything, that I just needed to listen at times. There were some times when I was smart enough to say at the beginning of the conversation, okay, do you want me just to listen, or are we going to try to fix this? And that sometimes set the tone for the conversation as well.
So one thing I think that I understood early on, and part of it just being married, is when I would come home and the kids would act as though mother was being unreasonable, I would pull out rule number one, which is mother is never unreasonable. You always take your wife's side, always, always, always. And when you come home and maybe you're around and you see that she's being unreasonable, see rule number one, okay? Because, so that's one thing I think I worked very hard and tried to always do. The other side of that coin is with my children, I think, because I wasn't immersed in the struggles all day long, is I had the ability to relax with the kids. And if it wasn't quite complete, I was okay with that with them. If you understand, I mean, with them, I could be a little more soft. So I could be the good cop a little bit. And they need that too. They need that release too. But always being supportive of your wife who has to carry that burden of the discipline while you're not in the house. So just that balance, I think I do okay.
You did amazing.
I'm going first next, aren't I? Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to take the mic away from him. It's coming, I can tell. So, okay. All right. The next question is, have you ever read any of Charlotte Mason's volumes? And if so, what sort of difference has it made in your homeschool?
Okay, so I read volume 6 I read every night before I go to bed, all kinds of stuff, World War II books and all kinds of genres. But anyway, I spent a certain amount of time, I read through volume 6 as a nighttime bedside deal, as almost a nighttime devotional, just because that's the way that book reads. I mean, you get truth from Scripture, because she mentions it, and then everything she talks about and the way she looks at our children, at, you know, children in general, is through God's eyes. And so reading through that book, I'd elbow her and, oh gosh, listen to this, you know, and she'd roll over me and kind of roll her eyes like, yeah, read that 2 years ago, but did a talk on it last week, but whatever. But it was just neat to read it from that perspective. Is just every night, just read, you know, 4 or 5 pages, or sometimes a chapter when you got pulled in, because that's how it works with most good books. So that volume 6 is one that just, it really gave me an overall view and an overall appreciation, and so I was really appreciative of that book.
So I want to give kudos to Art for the Idle Challenge. So 2 years ago, we started the process of reading through the 6 volumes. And I had not read any of the volumes as my kids were growing up. So this is basically after my kids are done that I'm reading the volumes, which was, you know, real smart. That was huge to go through that and to read that and to interact with the guys. To see the philosophy as a whole and try to get an understanding of what she was trying to say as a whole, not just a quote here or a quote there, you know, at a retreat somewhere along the way. I wish that I had read them early on. You know, you're always too busy. But, you know, if you can wrap your mind around the philosophy as a whole, that's huge. So he's starting it up again. This is a little commercial. Next month, so I'm sure there'll be more talk of that and how you can get started with that. I'd really encourage that if you can.
Yeah, plus one on the Ideal Challenge. You can buy yourself a shirt.
Uh,
It's a little premature. I've got a few pages left, but I'm so close. There's no way I'm going to miss this last meeting. I guarantee it. 2 years ago, I started the Ideal Challenge, the Idol Challenge, and had not read any Charlotte Mason works. All of the Charlotte Mason information that I got came, you know, from Sandra, you know, and so she would, I mean, she, when she got turned on to Charlotte Mason, it was like, you know, the planets finally aligned just perfectly. And it was like all of the things that she had been searching for in how to educate our kids, just made sense. And it spoke, you know, directly to her spirit in how to treat those, how to treat our children and educate them. I was coming here. Gosh, I've been here 7 times or 8 times, I think, and so I got a lot of the community. And about 2 years ago, our conversation on the way here was, you know, Greg, you really got to get in, or we have to get off the bus here, right? You know, that you either need to step up and take part, or you know, or we're going to have to change how we're doing this, and. Coincidentally, that was the year that Art had been thinking about the Idol Challenge, and he brought it up, and I really could not emphasize strongly enough to any of you men who are thinking about it, who are thinking like, yeah, that sounds like a good idea, but boy, that's 2 years is a long commitment. I can't emphasize enough how important it is to read through that material, to study it, to have conversation with guys like this. I mean, you know, I'm not kidding. Every month, we, you know, I can just sit there and listen to these guys talk about Mason's ideas and philosophies. So the, you know, again, I don't do any of the formal education, but the impact that it's had on me personally, it has been foundational in how I father my children, how I see them, how I. You know, when she talks about the child being a whole person, you know, and when you read those books and you get an idea of how she loved children, she just loved these children, and she saw them as amazing image bearers of God. You know, when you start looking at your kids like that, it changes, you know, not only the way that you teach them, but it changes the way that you see them and react, or, you know, talk with them and live with them. So, all right, I could just blab on about this for a long time. You should do the Idol Challenge.
I have not read any books, any of the books at all. I've read portions of them. Sally's read some of them to me. I'm not a reader. I'm an educator on the technical level, and if you walked into my office today, you'd see it's a life in that whole. And I stop and I read that periodically to remind myself, to kind of realign myself. So that's how it's changed my teaching. But it is good that Sally and I can visit back and forth about concepts, and that's important because you got to be kind of on the same page.
So I first got the 6 volumes back in 2005, and I would say in the 10 years that followed, I did read the 6 volumes, and I read a couple of them maybe a second time, and maybe certain chapters that I reread and so on. But I think that going through the discipline of intentionally reading them in a shorter span of time instead of 10 years, doing it in 2 years, has helped me to have a much deeper understanding. And it averages out to 3 pages a day. And I found that that's the best way it works for me, trying to do 20 pages on the weekends. It's 3 pages a day. I do it after I do my daily devotions. It's a small thing, and it just becomes something that permeates part of my thinking. In terms of how it's affected our homeschool, I would love to say that our homeschool and our home is just like an incarnation of the 6 volumes. That's not the way it's been. I mean, I think I look at the volumes and I see portrayed in there a beautiful picture of an ideal way that things should be. And I would say that that it's influenced our home and our homeschool quite a bit. But I think that there are certain things, there are certain constraints in our lives, and there are constraints in my own heart that keep us from creating that perfect image. But I would say that it has had a powerful impact on our homeschool and on our home.
All right, this might not apply to all of you. The question is, did your family transition from a different philosophy into the Charlotte Mason philosophy? If so, can you describe the difference? Did you have an aha moment?
We started out very early in our homeschool journey, not really sure. We found Charlotte Mason pretty early and made that decision. So it was more of the frog in the slowly warming up water. It wasn't just a, this is horrible, we need to move something different. It wasn't a disaster in trying to look for something better. So it was kind of boring. Sorry. I could make something up.
No.
Okay. In prison, we were in the cells next to each other.
Oh, no.
Sorry.
I got nothing.
Sure how to follow that. Truth be told, I wasn't on board with the whole homeschool idea when we started, but I thought, hey, mama's rarely unreasonable and usually right, especially where it came to the kids. And we kind of started out, and she was kind of accumulating methodologies and teaching and, teaching them to read and using different tools and things like that. And it was, I guess it was going pretty well. The kids were learning to read and stuff like that. At some point, I want to say she got, I think it was probably Home Education was probably the first volume from the 6-volume set that Sandra read. And then she just went all in, So I would say that it has, the aha moment for me was when my 13-year-old son, who struggles with attention a lot like his dad, I would come home and he would tell me all these amazing things that he learned in school, but he didn't realize that he was in school. He was just learning all these really cool things and had all this stuff to tell me. And I went, wow, there's really something to this.
Well, the first time around, we didn't. The first three, our oldest child is 31, and 27 and 25, right? And they've all been successful, I guess, in their own way. But the difference between when we started the second set of kids is that it seems to be more discovery. They're enjoying it. The learning, where the other was more of a forced,
Yeah, I think my story is the same as Kent. I like the frog and the heating water. That's pretty much the way it was for us. Yeah, except the prison part.
Okay, next question. If you could start the homeschool journey all over again, what is one thing you would do differently? Greg, let's start with you, right in the middle.
Oh, how much time do we have? I think looking back, I wish that I had taken more of Sandra's subtle encouragement to get involved, more of her. She would share ideas with me and they would resonate with me, but I still, for the longest time, just kind of saw this as her You know, that's like her thing, you know. That's what she did. And so I think if I could go back, I would start establishing those relationships with my own children again, more like I'm trying to do now.
The best answer is we are starting all over again. And this time we're all Charlotte Mason. Our youngest of the oldest, when we brought the little boys home as babies, was 14. So by the time we were done with the first set, we hadn't started with the second set. So we did start over, and we started with Charlotte Mason, and it's going well.
So when I very early on started to homeschool, I read some advice that in a little homeschooling manual that I read back in 2003, and I think that it's probably the best advice for a homeschool family getting started. And I'm going to read it in a minute, but if I were to have a chance to do it over, and I believed and I saw that this advice made sense, but I guess I didn't really take it seriously enough, and I would go back and say, I would kind of tell myself in 2003 and say, this really is right, and you really need to be serious about this, like really serious about this. And that quote is this: simplify your lifestyle. Weed out activities and things that don't support your decision to homeschool. Together, organize a routine that meets your family's needs. There is a time in life for many things, but your children will never be this age again. Now is the time for your children.
I guess it's with anything in life that you grow into, whether it's your Christian walk or just your relationship with your spouse, you wish you could go back in the beginning and know what you know today and then say, let me be that person back then so that I can, you know, ramp up the increase in knowledge and being more accurate in what you do. So I guess, you know, it'd be nice to know then what I know today about all the aspects. And one thing that she talked about is this philosophy, if you take little bits and pieces of it and try to do just pieces here and there, it's ineffective. It needs to be a complete understanding and a complete implementation. And basically, like Greg said, sell out completely to the process and the method, and it will be much more multiplied, the ability for it to go well. And so, but that takes knowledge and experience. And so I guess sprint to the understanding early would be a good way. I would say I would wish we could do differently is just really immerse yourself and understand it as quickly as possible and reach out to people who know more than you do and that have experienced things and get to that point sooner, because your kids will benefit, your family will benefit, and honestly, this is about a life. Your life will benefit. Your life will benefit if you really embrace the truths. And this is not, she's not a saint. She's not a god, okay? I know we kind of joke about that stuff, but she really isn't. She just happens to be a person who understood God blessed her with truth and wisdom, and she passed it on. You know, we don't venerate Paul, but we certainly venerate the person he worshiped, right? And so we use his word. So it's the same kind of thing. She was just somebody who brought God's truth and applied it to educating children. And so it almost feels icky where you just kind of feel like I got to shy away from this person because we keep saying her name as though she's something more than just a human being who God used to bring truth into the world. That's what she did. And so I guess just sprint to the wisdom, sprint to the truth. That's what I would do differently.
I'm going to piggyback off of that. So like I mentioned, my kids are out of the house. And so in the midst of that, you do some reflecting, right? As you're putting closure on a portion of your life. And in the midst of that, I'm reading the books for the first time. And I'll be honest, there were some times when I was reading passages in it was painful to read because I could envision a event that had happened in the lives of my kids and how I interacted with them. And it was, it was painful for them, painful for me. So what Kent just said of sprinting to the knowledge early is like huge. So why did I not read those volumes earlier? I don't know. It just didn't happen that way. I wish I had. We had a conversation at lunch with a couple, and why does God not give us everything right away? Why is it that we go through parenting and those 18, 20, whatever years, I guess we never stop parenting really in a sense, but why don't we get that all up front? We could be such better parents if we had all the answers to begin with. And we came to the conclusion, this is almost as much about us as it is about them. What does God use to help sanctify us, to help change us? All those painful things that we go through with our kids. Does that mean we are negligent and just, whatever, because it's going to help us grow? No, I wish I had read those books earlier, because I think that would have been helpful. But in the midst of that, God helped me to grow. So there's kind of, I don't know how you put that together theologically. Some of you smarter people can do that. But I think the other thing that I would mention is I wish I had done a better job of establishing a family worship time. So work hard to do that. And the last thing is be careful to make sure that your relationship with your kids is not trumped by what you think your reputation is. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but there were so many times when I felt like all this pressure to have some sort of a reality of what my family was like, that I hurt my relationship with my kids because I was going to pound them into being what I wanted them to be, what I thought they needed to be to make me look good. I don't know if that makes sense. Oh, I wish I hadn't done that. There were so many times I did that.
Okay, this might be some overlap with this next question here, but I wanted you to talk to the dads out there who might be listening to this later or who are out here. Talk to the newbie dad who's just starting out homeschooling. And my question was, what is one piece of advice, just one, that you would want him to know?
I would say, go to your wife, ask her what she needs, and try to give her what she needs.
My advice would be, I would kind of draw an analogy. I'm going to draw an analogy to the business world. So, I work for a software company and I manage a team. It's a pretty large team, and I can't keep track of everything that's going on my teams. But, and I can't do everything that my teams are doing. But I'm responsible for what my teams are doing, and so it's a good idea for me to make sure that I know what's happening in my organization, and it's important that I know when I need to step in and what I need to do, because at the end of the day, if somebody who's on my team messes up, I have to answer for it. And so I would take that analogy into this realm of homeschooling and say to the dads, you can delegate as much as you want, and that's fine. It's totally fine. But you're responsible. And so make sure that you do the diligence that's appropriate for that level of responsibility.
I'd say go find a couple of really good books, and there's plenty out there, and I can tell you, people can tell you what books to read, but get on the couch with your kids and read aloud to them. Just, I never regret a minute that I spent doing that.
I'm gonna say this, that so discouragement is one of the biggest tools that the enemy uses, and so what that does is it locks us up and it keeps us from doing anything. It sort of stops us from doing anything, and so if you're a new dad, try not to become discouraged. And I just read recently in my Bible reading about Caleb, when he was 85 years old. He was one of the spies that went into the land and said, came back and said, let's go do this. We can do this. God is on our side. And 10 spies said, no, we can't. And the spies went out, or the Israelites ended up going for 40 years in the wilderness, and they eventually come back, and Caleb and Joshua are the only two left of that generation. Caleb is 85 years old at the end of that story, and he comes to Joshua, and he says, hey, I'm 85 years old, but I think there's territory still to be taken. And I know that that country that I want to go take, there's some big dudes there, but I think if the Lord's with me, I think I can do it. And he didn't give up at even, you know, towards the end of his life. There's territory that can be taken. So the lesson to myself, you know, if there's some damage in my relationship with my kids, it's not too late, right? If you're a new dad and you've already made some mistakes, it's not too late. Like, don't give up. The discouragement, don't let that creep in and just take over and make you not do anything.
Yeah, I have something prepared, but it just kind of is striking me that new dads find dads like these guys and get to know them. You know, really, I can't tell you how much of an impact these guys have had on my education, on my education, and my fathering. So. Just so much good stuff up here, and out here. I mean, there's just a lot of wisdom in this room. So, I think that what I would tell the new father, who is just getting started, and maybe your wife is pretty fired up on this Charlotte Mason person, and it seems a little bit weird the way people quote her books like it's scripture, and that seems a little weird, but. You know, I think what I would, the advice I would have is I'm trying to remember the name of the plenary you gave where Art talked about for love, I am willing to steal time from myself to give it to my children. And the only reason that you would do that is purely out of love. You know, there's a lot of stuff that I want to do for myself. I mean, I there's books I want to read and songs I want to write and record and things that I want to accomplish because I'm human. And I think all of us do that. But if you're anything like me, you have a hard time giving up the things that you do for yourself for the good of somebody else. And, you know, who better to give that up for than your children, right? I mean, you know, I give the best of my day away to people at work that, you know, I spend a couple hours a day with. I come home and these are the people that I love. So I think that, go listen to it. I think it's on charlottemasonpoetry.org. A Call to Parents. Check that out on charlottemasonpoetry.org. Listen to that. That was a really inspiring message to me.
Okay, and one last question from me here. And this time I want you to talk to the homeschool moms out there that are just starting their Charlotte Mason homeschool journey. What do you wish that she would understand about dads and their role? Who wants to start with that one?
Art. you got to stick with me. This is going to make sense in the end. the advice that I give to my daughters as they start thinking about the husband that they may be blessed with one day is, we are boys and we will conform to the lowest standard to which you allow. So it's okay to expect from us, right? I mean, it's okay that that you encourage us, and it's okay to to want us to be involved. You know, I give Sandra a lot of credit because she was very gentle and very persistent, and she didn't give me the opportunity to not take part. And that I think is really great. You know, so.
Going next here. I think that a lot of dads don't get it. And I think that you need to start a dialogue. You need to start a dialogue with your husband that's non-accusing and try to help him understand the situation that you're in and the help that you need. Because they're not going to come to you like I just recommended, likely. And that he is equally yoked in the task that you're about, and invite him to LER.
So the best book that I read about marriage is a book called Intimate Allies by Dan Allender. And in that book, one of my favorite parts is where he talks about the difference between men and women in light of the fall and the curse. And what he notes is that the curse that was applied to Adam was quite different from the curse that was applied to Eve. And he said that for Adam, God cursed the ground so that now work would be more difficult, and it would be with the sweat of his brow by which he would be able to produce his livelihood. And for women, the curse affected their relationships, the pain in childbirth, and their yearning for their husband. And so Dan Allender, from that scriptural truth, he deduced that there's some fundamental drives between men and women, and that men, faced with the fall and the curse, work is difficult for us, and every day we struggle to perform and to produce for our families, and it's an extraordinarily difficult task, and that women long for closeness and intimacy and find it a difficult thing to achieve. So how do men and women deal with those aspects of the curse? So according to Allender, men strive for absolute competency in a very narrow field. And that's how they find relief from the pain and struggle of toil. So they become exceptionally good at their chosen field, and then they don't have to deal with the constant friction and struggle of failure. So there's a tendency among men to hyper-specialize and to get comfortable in their field that they know very, very well. And for women, they have a strong desire to find ways where they can have lots of connection and intimacy and closeness with others. Now take those two profiles and imagine what happens when we come to a place like the LER, okay? So let's make no mistake about it. Homeschooling, as you've seen from everyone to talk about, it's a skill to learn. And men stepping into that are finding themselves suddenly outside of their area of competence. They haven't spent a lifetime learning how to be really, really good at homeschooling. They've spent a lifetime learning how to be really, really good at teaching at school or being a software engineer or being a lawyer or being a doctor. And you suddenly thrust them into an environment now where their competence is highly questioned. And I say this from experience. Now, on the other hand, women come into an environment like this, and it's wonderful because you've got all of these wonderful connections, and we've heard different people share about how I feel loved and I feel cared for when I come here. So what I want you to understand, first of all, is that the men who have stepped outside of their field of competence and their comfort zone to come and be part of this are courageous men, and I applaud them for doing so. Yeah. And what I would, I would just say to the wives to just to try to understand that the challenge of competence is even magnified more when a man sees his wife as being more competent in a particular area. That just magnifies the challenge. So it's even more difficult for a man to come into an environment where he sees his wife as this high expert, highly capable person in a particular field, and now challenging this dad to somehow come up to speed in an area where he's even, you know, not as skilled as his wife is. It's very, very difficult. And so I would encourage mothers to understand that predicament and that challenge that men face when they enter into the arena of homeschooling. The second thing that I would want to communicate to mothers is, I'll just say, speaking from my experience in marriage, Barbara, for me, is the one place, is my sanctuary. She is the one place in the world where I am safe. The world challenges me constantly, and I'm constantly having people telling me what I'm not doing right, what I'm not doing good enough. And I'm reminded of this from everywhere. In every endeavor that I do, there are people telling me what I'm doing wrong and what I'm not doing well enough. And there's one place that I can go where there's somebody who is going to give me some relief from that. And I can finally just say when I'm with her, you know, I can be who I am, and that's good enough. And if my wife was yet one more voice that was telling me what I'm not doing good enough and what I'm not doing right, that would take away my sanctuary. And I would hate to lose that. No matter how good Charlotte Mason is, no matter how good homeschooling is, I would not want to lose that safety. And I think that's related to the third point, is I just want to let people know kind of my own story, is that I was invited to the arena of homeschooling by my father-in-law. I was convinced to homeschool by a book by Chris Klicka. And my gold standard in terms of Charlotte Mason understanding and exposition and is a man, is Dr. Benjamin Bernier. So that's my story. And I just think that men generally like to learn and be led often by other men. And so sometimes that's just something that I think mothers have to accept.
I guess from my point of view, as if you're a wife here and a mother who has a husband who just is completely disconnected or just ignorant of what you're trying to do, is to start really small and just ask him to do one little thing, whether it's read for 10 minutes a night. And what will happen is when he sees, the term is bright eyes, when he sees that sparkle in his child's eyes, when they get something because of his interaction with them, then you don't have to lead him anymore. Then he'll start asking you what to do. And it's just like anything that draws you forward, anything that's of interest. You don't need pressure, right? My second son fell in love with World War II and learned about every airplane on both sides and what they did. And we didn't have to push him in any direction at all, and ended up with a trip to Normandy Beach with a college group. And just so it draws you forward. And the same thing with your husband is just ask for a very small thing, and your children will encourage him to learn more, rather than being pushed from behind, but be drawn forward by that brightness in your children's eyes. And I think that's a good way to start.
I think sometimes I felt really clueless, and I think my wife was trying to tell me what she needed, but I wasn't always cueing in on that. So just keep asking and, you know, try to ask in such a way that, and it'll, like, give us a list. Like, this would be helpful to me if you did this, 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 this. And, my wife did a really good job of that, but I think I was sometimes kind of clueless. So keep asking.
Well, thank you guys so much for your honesty and your humility, and it was really good. So let's go to some audience questions. Does anyone here have a question? You state it, and then I'll repeat it for the recording. So yes, in the back. So the question is, what volume would you start with if you're just beginning, and whether you're speaking to the moms or the dads as the best start? And, you know, I'm just, because I know Art has written so much about this, I'm just going to let him answer this. So
when I when I put together the Idle Challenge for Men 2 years ago, I tried to think, okay, what would a male approach need to be for the six volumes? And so I thought that it made sense to start with volume six because I thought that a guy would like to get an overview of the philosophy and complete that first. What I found is that the volumes actually build a lot of ideas and vocabulary build through the volumes. And so I found actually that we started off, it was actually quite difficult for the guys to immediately jump in volume six, because on the one hand, it did give you a complete overview of the philosophy, but it assumed a lot of building blocks that maybe if you were in the time frame and you had been immersed in the PNEU, maybe you would be able to know that. But I found that it was difficult for them to get their bearings in terms of what was going on. It turns out that if you start with volume one, regardless of what age your children are, if you start with volume one, the ideas are explained more at length. And so, for example, habit is introduced in volume one over a period of something like 50 pages. And then you get a grounding in that concept, and then you're able to then better understand it as it's recapitulated in different forms in the later volumes. So I think that now there are certain, you know, elements of volume one that can raise questions when you're reading through it, but I think that the balance, though, the benefit of getting some of those core ideas and spending time in detail grasping them fully is a very, very good foundation for the later volumes, in my opinion.
All right, Jen.
Media is competing for the eyes and the ears and the hearts of our children. And as fathers, has your media consumption changed since you began homeschooling and reading particularly the volumes even? And if so, how? And do you have some advice for parents here on your own media consumption and that which you see in your children?
Well, I don't know why, but when we first got married, we've never had cable TV in our house ever, and it was kind of weird. And so when we did watch something, it was something we had to go choose, and that was very helpful for us because you couldn't just turn it on and get flooded. And I know that's not for everybody, but I think that's helped us as a family. Just if I want a 2x4, I have to go buy it, and I don't have lumber dumped in my front yard every day where I can just go stumble across it and right? So it just... it made it harder to go get immersed in that stuff. So I think that's good. And I think, yeah, it's really important for us to model. We tell our kids to put their phones down, and then they look over and we're on our phones at the wrong time. Not that we don't need to check things, but they're trying to talk to us and we're looking down at the screen. And so it just, all those are opportunities to really model that. And we can really make it difficult for us to hold them accountable when we don't respect them more than a message that we can read 2 hours from now. And the world will not end if you don't text back right away. I mean, there's just lots of data about how we have gotten to the point where our response time to someone gives them or takes away value that they feel that they have. And it's wrong. How you doing? If I don't respond in 3 minutes, they feel like I don't like them. What's wrong? Did I make you mad? You know, and so you start that just because my response time is a dumb question. How am I doing? I'm doing fine. Why did you ask? I mean, we talked yesterday. I haven't. So just that kind of thing. We just need to understand what the media can do for us. Wonderful things. I've learned more on YouTube videos about things that I would never be able to get in front of that expert. But we have to recognize it as what it is, and it's a tool, not, you know, just not something that is just mandatory that we shove down our throats all day.
I would agree wholeheartedly with that, especially with the boys. You know, this is a, you know, technology just has a draw, and I'm a nerd by trade. So it pulls me in too, and a lot of my life is connected through electronic gadgets, and I'm on call, and I have things to do. And we spend a lot of time talking about media, about digital media, entertainment, things like that. And our goal as a family is to be just extremely purposeful in what we use this tool for and what kind of entertainment we allow, because, you know, it's kind of insidious how, you know, all of these thoughts, what you let into your mind ends up, you know, overflowing out of your heart, right? And so to spend time on, on twaddle would be, is like having a diet of nothing but, cotton candy, right? I mean, it just becomes, and there's no shortage, you end up malnourished and, so yeah, we're just super purposeful.
And I agree with all of that. I just want to throw in one other thing that I put video games even in a separate category from other kinds of media. And I think particularly for boys, I think video games are dangerously addictive. And as a former gamer myself who has played many online, many all-night sessions and so on, this was one question that I was expecting to answer and didn't get the opportunity. What is my biggest regret looking back on my parenting? And my biggest regret was that I was unwilling to go with my gut and completely ban all video games from my home. And I think that my failure to do so was an irresponsible decision on my part. I think that video games in particular are not to be used in moderation. I think they're not to be used at all, full stop. That's my opinion.
Yes, courage of opinion. That's right. Kurt, do you want to, you've been reading a lot about this. Did you want to make a comment or make a pitch for your book discussion tonight or something?
Deep work. Yeah, we're going to... The book discussion tonight is deep work. If you haven't read the book and you want to come and sit and listen, you're certainly welcome to do that. 2 years ago, we read Amusing Ourselves to Death. So, yeah, I've been thinking about this. And I'll be honest with you, that's one of the biggest challenges you will face as a parent. And in school, I see my kids, the ones that are struggling with being addicted to their device, I mean, that opens so many avenues to, bad things in their lives, from mental health issues to addictions to, and so as a parent, how do you deal with that? So for a while we said to our kids, I forget the deal. It was like, you get an hour of TV a week or something, Well, I mean, they were going over the neighbor kids and they were watching 3 hours every day or, whatever it was. So, you can bring the hammer down and they're still going to find ways. So you have to have the conversation. What is this tool doing to you? And it's tough. It is tough. And so in the Deep Work book or in one of his TED Talks, Cal Newport says, it's one thing to go to Las Vegas and to play a slot machine, which is highly addictive. It's another thing to bring that slot machine home with you and have it with you all the time that you can pull on the lever anytime you want to, which is what that smartphone or whatever device could be if you walk into that tool with, no sort of discretion or whatever. And that's what we're doing. A lot of our kids are doing that. We're doing that. That wasn't there when we started out with our kids and we sort of fell into it as parents, and I'm not sure we handled it real well always. But you young parents have to deal with it. I mean, there are kids that are a year and a half old that know how to use an iPad better than I do. And so you're going to deal with that way more than what we ever had to. So,
anybody else want to make a comment on that? Okay, any other questions? Yes. So the question is, what do you see as some of the threats to your family and your home as far as implementing the Charlotte Mason method goes?
I mean, I think that the biggest threat is really your goal. And I think that that parents, I don't know, maybe I'll just speak for myself. I feel I felt a very strong desire to see my children be successful in the eyes of the world. And my son had a lot of challenge in his first year in college, and that really shook me deeply, because it made me wonder, it made me question my effectiveness as a father, my effectiveness as a teacher, my whole, do I understand education? I'm here talking about education. And I want my son to be as successful as I was academically in school. And I really, really wrestled with that. And, I met with, the pastor of my church, and, I I said, I need to meet with you. I said, look, you know, I'm a totally low maintenance member of your congregation. I've been coming here faithfully every Sunday. When have I ever asked you for pastoral advice? But I'm like, I need your pastoral advice. And I said, I'm just going to lay it out. I'm not going to sugarcoat this. I'm not going to spin it. I'm just going to tell you exactly what I'm feeling about things. I laid it all out before him. He listened carefully and he reflected on it. And then I think the Lord used him to speak to me. And he said, Art, you know, Jesus said that you can't serve two masters. You either serve God or you serve mammon. And I think that if you think that a Charlotte Mason method is a way to get success in the world's eyes and to get your kids on the road to mammon because it's a better form of education than something else, then in the end of the day, that's who you're going to be serving. But you've got to make a choice, because if you're serving the Lord and if you're serving God, then that's a different measure. And if you're clear on that goal all the way through, then I think you're going to be protected against so many things. So I think it's really the love of, you know, the pride of life, the eyes, you know, the great warning, it's the world. I think that that is the greatest threat to protect your children from and your family from.
I mentioned technology, and I think that's a huge factor in relationships. So that's that would be a big one. But I think going back to an earlier answer that I gave about sort of allowing your reputation to trump the relationship you have with your kid. So the threat would be you're trying to push your kids into some mold, preconceived idea of what you think they should look like, how they should act. And, you know, there are... You know what I mean when I say that. Like, I think it's almost saying somewhat what Art is saying, but sort of this preconceived notion that their story is going to look like this because my story was like this and it's going to end this way, and not allowing God to kind of work so that their story is their story. And if that means that, you know, my kids go way over here before they get here, I'm gonna do everything I can to take back whatever territory I can, but I'm gonna allow God to work, and to trust that He's gonna do that.
One thing, and this is more sports related, because my dad was a coach for many, many years, but he talked about if you're really good in sports, you shouldn't have to say anything about it. You should let other people say that about you, right? And so, from the other side, from our children's side, there is a tendency in there for our children, because we feel so strongly about our educational method and about our commitment, that we tend to feel prideful about how we are educating. Because I don't know that somebody who's sending their kids to someone else to be instructed, they're putting their children out there, paying a certain amount of money and getting a product back, but emotionally they're not nearly as involved as we are, because we are just, our hearts are in this 100%, right? And so we are emotionally tied to our children's education in a way that somebody who doesn't do this can never understand. And so even our children will tend to start to get an arrogance about the educational method that has been used with them. And they'll make jokes. We're weird because we're homeschooled. But that's kind of almost a cover for a pridefulness that can sneak in, because we believe so strongly and we work so hard at making this successful and make it effective, that the humbleness that we want for our children, we destroy by our insistence on how hard we're working at this. And so when she talks about humbleness, she doesn't talk about kids thinking less of themselves, but not thinking about themselves at all. And that's what God calls us to. He doesn't want us to put ourselves underneath other people, that we're worse than them. What he's saying is, don't think about yourself at all. Put other people first above everything. Love other people more than you love yourself, right? And so that's one thing I would just really work with your children, is regardless of the gifts God has given you, whether it's parents that care enough to homeschool you and to pour their lives into you and to help you have a good view of yourself, don't use that as a cause for arrogance, because you could have been born into other circumstances. This is not something of yourself. This is something that came from outside. And just be humble and be grateful that you have parents that are willing to do this and that understand your position with God. So,
and I think it's been touched on, but maybe I want to make it clear kind of in my own mind. We've really been talking a lot about relationships. We've been talking about relationship with God. We've been talking about relationship with our children. And we would be amiss if we would go through the full education of our children and lose the relationship with them and not be bringing them to a relationship with Christ.
Amen. Jackie. So the question is, how have you guys lived out raising your children? She has three sons, particularly when it comes to time and the time you give them. Something along those lines?
I believe that you teach them by the way as you walk all the time. And you're holding the door. You're teaching them when you go to church, when you go to the mall, to hold the door for ladies, treat each other with kindness and chivalrous, you know. You just don't ever stop. You just constantly are instructing. And you have to be the example. And then when you fall short, you've got to say, I'm sorry I fell short. And and this is how we're going to be better.
I could add to that a little bit. Going along with sacrificing your own desires, things that you want to do, that you want to be, what we try to do and what I try to do is find those opportunities, number one, to talk with my sons, that, you know, God put our family together and he gave everybody in this family a responsibility, and it's my responsibility to leave the house and go, you know, and do my nerd thing all day. And gave your mom a responsibility to take care of you while you're here. He gave you a responsibility while you're here to do your best and to do excellently, as if working for the Lord, right? And so that's a concept that we've talked about a lot. The other thing that we did as a musician, the service people normally ask me for is to play music. That's a very individual thing for me. You know, it's something that I do, and it didn't involve my babies, right? It didn't involve my little kids. So again, we tried to always find ways that we could involve the kids, you know, in ways that we serve, in ways that we do things, we had them come and help us, you know, serve meals at, you know, at whatever, you know, homes and things like that. We still go to retirement homes and things that where they can be directly involved. And with the understanding that, you know, we're going to serve, you know, with great power comes great responsibility, you know, always kind of resonates with my son. And so we go and we'd find ways that we can serve as a family, and then they can see dad serving, they can see mom serving, and they kind of step into that same thing. So
one thing we try to do is find living books. And why do we look at living books? Because it shows people going through circumstances, making decisions, and seeing the outcomes, right? Life. And for better or worse, as a father, you are a living book standing in front of your sons every day. And so as men, we tend to, we can say, well, we need to take care of this chore, do this task, and I'll just take care of it. And we don't explain how it's done, and we just knock it out, right? Because we check the box and get on to the next thing. And so one thing I've tried to do more with Liam, and he's sitting back there, so this is a little awkward, but more than my other sons is to talk through the struggles I'm going through at work and the relationships that I'm going through. And they can start to understand that at a pretty young age, filtered for some context occasionally, but to just say, this is what I'm struggling with this person. And as I go through that process of dealing with that person and coming to some kind of conclusion, he gets to see that all played out and see, you know, we could have taken a left-hand turn there and maybe would have been a little better or a little worse. But he gets to watch our lives. And I think as fathers, we tend to just knock the job out and we don't let them see the intricate parts of having relationships with other people and how do you work through those things. So I think that's one thing we can do is to let them into our lives, the intimate part, the tough parts, and let them walk with us and see the outcomes. And then they're going to make their own decisions of whether they do it differently or the same, just like they do when they read a good book. But at least they're exposed to actions and then outcomes, and they get to make their decisions. So I think that's, and it's scary to do that. First time I did that with Liam is just like, I'm stepping over some imaginary out of bounds rule that you don't let kids learn about the adult world. But we sit here in this educational paradigm and we say, that's exactly what we want them to see is how the real world works, not 25 8-year-olds, which isn't the world, right? So I think that's what I would suggest.
Okay, I think we have time for one more question. Glenn, let's. So the question is, dads, what are some of the practical things that you guys have done to help create atmosphere in the home?
Well, Glenn, I mean, that's totally insightful. And that's actually something that really came home in the first year of the Idle Challenge was I think the dads all kind of made in consensus, you know, about a third of the way through, was like, wait a minute, we don't, even if we're not doing the formal lessons at all during school time, like atmosphere, education is atmosphere, discipline, and life. Like, we actually need to be part of this because it's 24/7 and it's our whole family culture. And so that's actually what my next workshop is on, that entire concept of not just atmosphere, but discipline in life. And it's basically saying, what is the way that dads play a part in this, even if every single school lesson is done by the time they get home from work? So I'm not gonna give a preview of my answer because it's coming up shortly. But that was a very insightful observation.
Anybody else can go ahead and answer.
Anybody want to add to that?
I like checklists, and so practical things that I do or that I try to do is I ask my kids to narrate to me in the car. You know, what are you reading? I mean, I try not to make it a thing so much as I make it a, what are you reading now? And I'm just amazed at the things that they'll tell me, or I'll ask, you know, what kind of things did you work on in this? Or, you know, just having kind of that mindset of, you know, there are things to learn about all around me. And especially at this stage in life, I'm in the car with those kids constantly. And it's kind of nice, right? Because you've got the captive audience. So the conversation things I do pretty regularly. You know, we put our picture study up, you know, in a frame, and so I'll try to remind myself, or as I'm walking through the kitchen, I'll take notice of the picture, and I'll go, wow, what is this? You know, and the same goes with nature study. So now that I'm participating, I know the questions to ask that give my kids the ability to tell me about what they're doing. And that, I think, that's how I envision it. It's just the air that we breathe in the house now is, you know, focuses around these things.
I think Greg really hit it well in that when you come home and you've got all the stuff you're trying to flush out for work and mama's got stuff she needs to tell you and your kids come up, and to really attend, just to be with them 100%. It's kind of like when I got emotional about reading on the couch, because I'm back on that couch looking at those little kids that are mine and reading to them, and it's crushing me right now. I'm sorry. But anyway, just to be totally with your children, they get the fact that you have other things going on and that you're giving to them 100% of your attention, and it's powerful. And it extends that atmosphere. School doesn't end at 3 o'clock. School is life. This whole thing we're doing is our life. This is what we do every single day, 24 hours a day. As long as we're awake, we're doing this. And so you extend that concept when you come home and you're in lockstep with what's going on. And that creates that atmosphere, that extension of that atmosphere throughout our waking hours.
In the evenings, I've been putting the boys down to bed for quite a few years, the young ones. And actually, when I used to read to Caleb the Chuck Black stories, it was at night. It was just before bed. But the thing that I've been doing with the little boys is Levi and Josiah is Sally has printed off hymns. And so we go in, and the routine is I ask them a little bit about their day, encouraging them along, and that it's important to do school good and, you know, different things. And we'll pray. And it's interesting to find out what they pray about. But oftentimes we'll pray for Sally, you know, whether it's for her healing or if it's for just strength. But, you know, for her being a teacher to them, but also being mama. And if they don't interject it, sometimes I have to, you know, in the prayer. But I think, and then you read, and you were singing the hymns of the faith. And these are older hymns. And, you know, I get questions like, Dad, what's a flamingo? And it's blood flow mingled down. Okay. So... But understand, what does that do? That gives you the platform to explain what the hymn is, you know? And so it's really precious. It's those times. And I think the older we get, the more emotional it gets to be, it seems like. I find myself being a lot more emotional than I used to be in my 20s. But that's a very, very special time. And, you know, Levi, once in a while, he's a seven-year-old. Every once in a while, he doesn't want to do that with Dad. It makes me feel worse than it does him, I'm sure. But Josiah, the eight-year-old, he just seems to thrive on the fact that Dad wants to spend that time. And it's right before bed. It's his closure on the day. He wishes that I could go to bed right afterwards, because he likes the idea that I'm in a room next to him, but that's another story. But anyway, it's just a very good time to kind of get close and down personal and help him to realize that schooling is important.
All right, let's show our appreciation for all their wisdom. Thank you, guys.